Chapter 53. Nehemiah Accomplishes the Impossible. This chapter is based on Nehemiah 2, 3, and 4. The royal letters to the governors of the provinces along Nehemiah's route secured him prompt assistance. No enemy dared molest the official guarded by the power of the Persian king. However, his arrival in Jerusalem with a military escort, showing that he had come on some important mission, excited the jealousy of heathen tribes who had often heaped on the Jews injury and insult. Foremost in this evil work were certain chiefs of these tribes, Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem. These leaders watched Nehemiah with critical eyes and endeavored to thwart and hinder his work. Knowing that bitter enemies stood ready to oppose him, Nehemiah concealed his mission from them until a study of the situation should enable him to form his plans. He hoped to set the people at work before his enemies could be aroused. Choosing a few men whom he knew, Nehemiah told them of the object that he wished to accomplish and the plans he proposed. Their interest and assistance were at once enlisted. On the third night after his arrival, Nehemiah rose at midnight and, with a few trusted companions, went out to view the desolation of Jerusalem. On his mule, he passed from one part of the city to another, surveying the broken-down walls and gates of the city. Painful reflections filled his sorrow-stricken heart as he gazed on the ruined defenses of Jerusalem. Memories of Israel's past greatness stood in sharp contrast with the evidences of her humiliation. In secrecy and silence, Nehemiah completed his circuit. And the officials did not know where I had gone or what I was doing, and I had not yet told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, and the rest that were to do the work. RSV. The remainder of the night he spent in prayer, for the morning would call for earnest effort to arouse his dispirited countrymen. Nehemiah bore a royal commission requiring the inhabitants to cooperate in rebuilding the walls of the city, but he sought rather to gain the sympathy of the people, knowing that a union of hearts was essential in the work. When he called the people together, he presented arguments calculated to unite their scattered numbers. Nehemiah's hearers did not know of his midnight circuit the night before. But the fact that he was able to speak of the condition of the city with accuracy and minuteness astonished them. How Nehemiah won support. Nehemiah presented before the people their reproach among the heathen, their religion dishonored, their God blasphemed. He told them that, in a distant land, he had entreated the favor of heaven in their behalf and had determined to ask permission from the king to come to their assistance. He had asked God that the king might also invest him with authority and give him the help needed for the work. And his prayer had been answered in such a way as to show that the plan was of the Lord. Then Nehemiah asked the people directly whether they would take advantage of this opportunity and arise and build the wall. With new courage, they said with one voice, "Let us rise up and build." So they strengthened their hands for this good work. Nehemiah's enthusiasm and determination were contagious. Each man became a Nehemiah in his turn and helped to make stronger the heart and hand of his neighbor. When Israel's enemies heard what the Jews were hoping to accomplish, they laughed. "What is this thing that ye do? Will ye rebel against the king?" But Nehemiah answered, "The God of heaven, he will prosper us. Therefore we his servants will arise and build." Nehemiah's example wins the day. Among the first to catch Nehemiah's spirit were the priests. Because of their influential position, these men could advance or hinder the work, and their cooperation at the outset contributed not a little to its success. The majority came up nobly to their duty, and these faithful men have honorable mention in the Book of God. But a few, the Tekoite nobles, put not their necks to the work of their Lord. In every religious movement, some hold themselves aloof, refusing to help. In the record kept on high, every neglected opportunity to do service for God is recorded. And there, too, every deed of faith and love is held in everlasting remembrance. The people in general were animated by patriotism and zeal. Men of ability organized the citizens into companies, each leader making himself responsible for a certain part of the wall. Some built each one opposite his own house. RSV. With tireless vigilance, Nehemiah superintended the building, noting the hindrances and providing for emergencies. Along the whole of that 3 miles of wall, his influence was constantly felt. He encouraged the fearful, aroused the laggard, and approved the diligent. And ever he watched the movements of their enemies at a distance, engaged in conversation, as if plotting mischief. Nehemiah did not forget the source of his strength. His heart was constantly uplifted to the great overseer of all. "The God of heaven," he exclaimed, "he will prosper us." The words thrilled the hearts of all the workers on the wall. But Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem endeavored to cause division among the workmen. They ridiculed the efforts of the builders, predicting failure. "What are these feeble Jews doing?" exclaimed Sanballat mockingly. "Will they restore things? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of rubbish, and burned ones at that?" Tobiah added. "Yes, what they are building, if a fox goes up on it, he will break down their stone wall." RSV. The builders were soon compelled to guard continually against the plots of their adversaries, who formed conspiracies to draw Nehemiah into their toils. False-hearted Jews aided the treacherous undertaking. The report was spread that Nehemiah was plotting against the Persian monarch, intending to exalt himself as king over Israel, and that all who aided him were traitors. But the people had a mind to work. The enterprise went forward until the gaps were filled and the entire wall built up to half its intended height. Building with one hand, fighting with the other. The enemies of Israel were filled with rage. They had not dared employ violent measures, for they knew of the king's commission and feared that active opposition against Nehemiah might bring on them the monarch's displeasure. But now they themselves became guilty of the crime of which they had accused Nehemiah. They conspired all of them together to come and to fight against Jerusalem. At the same time, some of the leading Jews, disaffected, sought to discourage Nehemiah. "The strength of the bearers of burdens is decayed, and there is much rubbish, so that we are not able to build the wall." Discouragement came from still another source. The Jews who lived by them, taking no part in the work, gathered up the reports of their enemies to create disaffection. But ridicule and threats only inspired Nehemiah to greater watchfulness. His courage was undaunted. "We prayed to our God," he declares, "and set a guard as a protection against them day and night." So in the lowest parts of the space behind the wall, in open places, I stationed the people according to their families, with their swords, their spears, and their bows. And I said to the nobles and to the officials and to the rest of the people, "Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, who is great and terrible, and fight for your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your homes." RSV. We all returned to the wall, each to his work. From that day on, half of my servants worked on construction, and half held the spears, shields, bows, and coats of mail. Those who carried burdens were laden in such a way that each with one hand labored on the work, and with the other held his weapon. RSV. On different parts of the wall were stationed priests bearing the sacred trumpets. On the approach of danger at any point, a signal was given. So we labored in the work, and half of them held the spears from the rising of the morning till the stars appeared. Those who had been living outside Jerusalem were now required to lodge within the walls, to guard the work, and to be ready for duty in the morning. This would prevent the enemy from attacking the workmen as they went to and from their homes. Not even during the short time given to sleep did Nehemiah and his companions put off their clothing or lay aside their armor. The opposition that the builders in Nehemiah's day met from open enemies and pretended friends is typical of the experience that those today will have who work for God. Derision and reproach are hurled at them, and at a favorable opportunity, the enemy uses more cruel and violent measures. Among those who profess to support God's cause are those who lay his cause open to the attacks of his bitterest foes. Even some who desire the work of God to prosper will weaken the hands of his servants by reporting and half-believing the slanders of his adversaries. But, like Nehemiah, God's people are neither to fear nor to despise their enemies. Putting their trust in God, they are to go steadily forward, committing to his providence the cause for which they stand. In every crisis, God's people may confidently declare, "If God be for us, who can be against us?" Romans 8, verse 31. However craftily the plots of Satan may be laid, God can bring to naught all their counsels. He is in the work, and no man can prevent its ultimate success.